Okay. There we go.
Call the meeting of the Affordable Housing Collaborative Committee of March 23rd at 7:16.
Yep.
Okay. Would you state your names, please? George Helbig.
Joshua Port.
Leslie Kennedy.
Amy Crawford.
Joe Murphy, representative from the Planning Board.
And Brian Wagner from the Planning Department.
Okay. The first agenda item is the approval of the minutes. You all read the minutes.
I'll make a
comment.
Go ahead. Sorry, I was ready to make my motion.
Okay. Well, no, I just wanted to ask if anybody had any changes. If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Okay, I'll make the motion to accept the minutes.
Second?
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. So, we have no correspondence. Okay, so we have, you want to introduce yourselves to each other?
Yeah.
And us.
Sure. I guess I'm Josh. Yes. Student. I've been in town for not quite 2 years now, but, you know, close. Should be here for at least another 3 if the PhD stays on track, and maybe longer if it doesn't. Happy to be here. Good to meet you all.
Where are you originally from?
Massachusetts originally. Yeah, South Shore.
Okay.
Yep.
Nice. I'm Leslie. I've been a resident for about 7 years, I think in June. During the day, I work at CCRI. I do IT support in Newport. And I've recently started doing real estate part-time. So that kind of brought my attention to the issues of affordable housing and pricing and so forth. So,
Sales agent or what
yes.
Do you real estate?
Yes, sales agent.
Okay.
But as part of our learning about affordable housing and fair housing and stuff, it really opens your eyes to the issues everybody's running into trying to buy their first home or stay in their home.
I'm often surprised when I talk to real estate agents that they're not more aware of affordable housing, what's available, and, you know, housing, and how it works. So that's good.
Yeah, it's nice to see. I mean, I've already seen a few things going on, and it's nice because if you have somebody come to you who's not sure what they qualify for, at least you have something to offer them, you know, to look into it either here or elsewhere.
Yeah. I'm Amy Crawford. I am a fairly new resident to South Kingstown, but I was born and raised my own family in North Kingstown. And I was a nurse for almost 40 years and worked in the community with impoverished families. And so really saw, you know, sort of what that was like to try to work those ropes, and it wasn't easy. And then I bumped into Joe. I met Joe, and we just got to talking, and he said, you know, there's a position you might be interested in. And so I hadn't really ever thought about a position like this. And this is actually my first official meeting today.
Too. Oh, great. So, awesome.
that's me.
Okay.
George?
Hi, George Helwig. I've only been here about 2 years in Rhode Island. I'm from New Hampshire, but my background is in banking and affordable housing. I built affordable housing projects and also did housing counseling and counseling for new home buyers, first-time home buyers, and that type of thing. I also served on the planning board and the zoning board at different times in the town I came from, New Hampshire. That's my background.
So I'm Joe Murphy. I'm on the planning board. I've been on the planning board for maybe 8 years now. It's been a while. I've been a resident for close to 30. I've always been interested in development, and real estate, and affordable housing. So, it's kind of a good fit. I don't get to vote on any of this stuff, so I'm just here as the liaison from the planning board, and hopefully can sometimes chime in and tell you some of the things that we have I guess, concerns about or would like your help with. And the same way, if there's something you need from the planning board, hopefully I can bring that back for you.
All right, and just so you're aware, I'm Brian Wagner. I'm the senior planner in the planning department. I am the board's liaison to town hall. So any questions you have about town business or whatnot, my job here is to make sure that, you know, your agendas get out, your minutes get recorded, all in accordance with state law, and then we keep you guys operating in a legal capacity. Also, there are things in the town's comprehensive plan, objectives and goals and whatnot, that apply towards housing. So I'll be trying to direct your meetings to focus in on some of those things that we are supposed to be trying to accomplish to meet the goals we've set in the town comprehensive plan. That's about it.
Okay. So the first agenda item in the old business is election of officers.
And I
recommend we just postpone that until we have the full board here. Mm-hmm. Although we could elect two people tonight that aren't here and they can't sing. Okay, so the second item is the South County Commons, and that's the letter that we have here, right?
Yes.
Okay. Was that what you were?
So this project came on the horizon, and when I originally put it on your agenda, I thought it was going to be a tight turnaround time-wise in terms of the schedule in front of the planning board. Some issues have come up with the application, and it's sort of in a holding pattern right now. The reason this is referred to as the District 5 apartments is because this is the last part of the South County Commons development to the north. There are 8 districts. Some of the districts are open space, some are residential, some are business, whatnot. When the master plan that approved all of the districts was approved by the planning board in 1998, this district was designated for commercial and light industrial. Their goals have changed a little bit since then. I think everybody's familiar with the hotel that's there. There are also approvals in front and in back for 2 other pads that have never been developed. Don't know whether they will ever be developed. So they're now looking to do the apartment building there. However, we've told them recently that we need them to go back and look at the original master plan approval, because what they're approaching this as if it was a new project.
They being who, Brian? The developer?
The developer.
Okay.
They're approaching it as if it's a new project, and we've asked them to go back and relook at it because we think, and this is sort of a technical issue, but that they need to go back and look at it as a modification to a previously approved project, which, since this whole thing was approved as a package, ultimately brings up a bigger discussion about whether or not what they're proposing now fits in with the package. So we are awaiting responses from their attorneys on that.
And you can't do it the opposite way. You can't do it by modifying the plan. You know, modifying that original 1996.
No, they can, but they have to ask the planning board for permission to modify.
Oh, they have to.
Right, so the planning board has already given approval for that. In order for them to change it, they have to ask the planning board for permission. So it's slowed down a little bit, so you guys have a little bit more time to look at this. I think this provides some interesting questions for you guys. It certainly provides a lot of housing units in an area that needs housing units. We need market rate units as well as affordable units. Rentals like this, by their very nature, will be more affordable than some of the other rental options in the area, which are a majority single-family homes or maybe duplexes. However, the site presents some challenges for the developer, for the number of units he's asking to put in there. So I'll leave that to you guys to open the floor for your discussion.
Did everybody have a chance to read the letter? And I have a question, not knowing this area as well as I should. Some of these issues, like the car, you know, the parking, the site for, you know, a dense housing with no outside, really, green space around it that you could usable green space around it. Is that ever considered a health and safety issue? You know, when you force people to walk on, there's no sidewalks down the main routes. There's, you know, where you're kind of cramming the people in there. They have to have cars, but their parking is kind of, doesn't really allow for that, the amount of parking they should have. Is that ever come up as an issue? Is there an issue with that as far as the regulations in the town?
There really isn't a code issue, and so far the developer's response has been, yeah, we consider this a car-dependent development. You know, everybody nowadays gets in their car to go everywhere. We really don't see that to be an issue.
And there's nothing that the town can do.
So I'm just going to use that as a segue.
Okay, sure, go ahead.
So whenever there's a project that comes in front of the planning board that has an affordable housing component, it's good if this board looks at it first and gives it consideration from all these aspects of affordable housing and follows through after their review with a letter to the planning board, so the planning board can consider that with either an endorsement or saying it's not endorsed. But even more than that, things that you think that you would like to see or you think that should be required, and all those things would be considered by the planning board when they review it, when they give approval, or when they come up with their conditions of approval. So in this, for instance, in this particular case, one of the things that struck me a little odd when the developer presented this project said, well, we don't really need outdoor space and we don't need it for kids, because we looked at other developments like this and there's no school age children. To me, that strikes kind of hard, because wait a minute.
Okay,
if you're a affordable housing component, you want stuff that can fit, you know, small children that and families, or at least I mean, only two bedroom apartments, so limited size. But we want to attract that, right, from an affordable housing. We want to make that available to affordable housing. So something like that would be good for the affordable housing to say, we have concern about this because it wouldn't provide or reach that on part of the community that we think needs the affordable housing, that wouldn't be appropriate. So we recommend that the developer build that in there. So all those concerns, Brian may feel different, but I would like to see you guys put in writing and give it to the planning board. And you know, I mean, it all has, at the end of the day, it has to be related to to housing, affordable housing, but as Josh said, so many of these things are tied in.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Megan did a pretty good job of doing that, though. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I had a couple of thoughts on the letter, and I wanted to ask the question first. So I was just like Google mapping the location, and it looks like there's like maybe, I don't know, like a quarter mile or so in the back, like kind of through the woods, like some sort of path that goes from a park area over to South County Commons. Like, I don't know if this path is a real thing, but it's on Google Maps. I was wondering if there is any way, like, you know, even if it's not a question of money, just like, would it be at all possible to connect this sort of through the back, like make a path through the forest there so you can walk over to South County Commons if you want, walk over to the park if you want, or is that area just impossible to get through?
When they did the hotel there, the planning board had that, had a lot of conversation relative to that and connecting the two. Mm. But I think that the final was that there's so much wetlands in there that it really was not possible. You know?
Okay.
But the overall issue of connectivity and transportation and all those definitely is something that this board should be giving some recommendations and thoughts to the planning board as we consider that project.
Yeah.
You know, the developer wanted to reduce the number of parking, saying that the parking wasn't really required, but at the same time, from that area, you really can't go anywhere unless you get in a car. So it's, some of those things have already, worried about.
Is there like a law or a guideline for parking spaces per like person in an apartment like that?
I think per bedroom.
No, it's per unit. Traffic requirements by our zoning ordinance are 2 off-street parking spaces per unit.
Yeah.
Now, the argument that the developer has put forward is that bedrooms are a better measure and that they're basically proposing 1 parking space per bedroom. Mm. So a 2-bedroom unit will get 2 and a 1-bedroom unit will get 1.
I'm actually really sympathetic to that, which is funny because I feel like I tend to like err on the side of not being on the side of the big developer, but if the goal is to maximize the amount of units that you can have, I would rather err on the side of, you know, there's not perfect parking and you got a couple people pulling onto the curb or whatever if they need to visit, versus a situation where you just are cutting out a whole bunch of units that you would actually otherwise need. And I would think that, like, from lots of efficiency perspectives, like even in terms of like, I would imagine tax efficiency, getting the most out of the spot, having more units would probably be better. And so I think erring on that side makes me happy, but I'm sure there's a lot of stuff that goes into this, like worried about, you know, people parking in an unsafe way or something, like overflowing back out onto the road. Like I can imagine concerns, but.
So I would think that the goals of the Affordable Housing Commission and the Planning Board are very similar, but not exact. Mm. You may be more concerned about the number of units. Mm. We certainly want to see an increase as well. Mm. But you should also be concerned about what is the quality of life for those units.
Oh, totally.
Right?
Yeah.
So,
especially the affordable units if they don't have transportation.
Yeah, are they too jammed up? Is that
totally
create a poor quality of life because they jam so many?
And then,
from the plan of what is probably some other considerations, like how it affects the community, how it affects the neighborhood, you know, the neighboring property owners, those types of things as well. So that might be, so it might not be a perfect overlap, but I think that you just need to take into those other considerations. What's the quality of life for the affordable housing?
Totally, totally. And that's where I agree with everyone's shared concern about it being sort of an island. I think all I'm getting at is, you know, if you are already in the market for affordable units, I think assuming that you're going to be a multi-car family as well is probably like overshooting what you would actually realistically need. So if you take, like, let's just take another hypothetical where there's no issue with connectivity. Like there's Like, let's leave out transit, but let's say there's like a beautiful park nearby and there are places to walk to, like, and so for quality of life reasons, that's not a concern, then would you have the same worry about the amount of parking spaces? Or would it be, you know, is that less of a concern if we're not so worried about it being that isolated? And so is, I guess, like, what is the main problem here? Is the main problem parking spaces, or is the main problem that it's like this site does not make sense for an apartment because you can't put kids there, you can't do anything there?
Well, it does shoehorn the, you know, the number of units and the number of parking spaces certainly is shoehorning that in. Yeah, it's just, if you go out there and drive around it, to me, it's, I have the issue with how do you get anywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's almost hard to separate those, the two issues.
It
really
is.
Yeah, no, that, mm-hmm. I think that's totally fair. I'm also gauging just for like future reference, because if something else comes up and you have a different set of like, you know, a different set of characteristics about the place, but you have the same parking question, what's the answer? You know,
and so sort of testing the waters a little too. You consider, okay, so can you talk Ripta into putting a bus stop there?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I don't know what the chances of that are, but that could be something that you, is that something that you can ask the developer to?
Well, I guess you can ask the developer to look into it, but the developer's not going to have control over Ripta.
No, of course
you
not.
Could, but you certainly could ask them, I guess, to inquire
about
it
and
report out on it.
Yeah.
Right?
What there is a organization, a nonprofit organization, that is specifically around improving public transportation. I can't think of the name of the man right now, but it is, it's an active group, and they do work with Ripta and with the state to talk about how we're going to make more access. And it specifically has to do with, not only, but very much has to do with the outlying towns, because these are the towns that it's so difficult to get, you know, if you want to go to, you know, Warwick, you've got to go to Providence first and come back, or whatever it is, you know. So there is that outlet for someone to, you know, sort of put some a request in, because I had thought about that too. Is it? I certainly have a concern about the lack of access as well for people.
The other question I have, and this is just my lack of knowledge about the town, but I remember when I was attending one of the past meetings, folks bringing up the fact that there's just very little area in the town on which you can legally put like multi-family or even apartment style housing. And so the question I want to ask to the group is, if this project is either not done or is very heavily downsized, are there alternatives that would get us to, like, let's just say money's not a factor for now, but like, are there alternative sites that could get us to a place that we're comfortable with in terms of the affordability of housing? Or is the limiting factor really space? Because I think then it sort of shifts the equation of how much should we be valuing the number of units and like being able to sacrifice maybe like things that we think would be really healthy in an area, but like are not necessarily mandatory compared to having a roof over your head versus not. Or you know, maybe it's the other way around where we can sort of afford that because there are other better places to build. I just don't really know what the case is.
I can't list it off the top of my head. So the zoning ordinance will generally cover what uses are allowed where.
Right.
Just to be clear, the zoning in this area does not provide for this kind of housing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. So they are seeking permission or approval of this under something known as a state comprehensive permit process.
Okay. Gotcha.
That process allows a developer to sidestep a lot of local zoning requirements. Mm-hmm. If they pledge to make at least 25% of their units affordable. Mm. So they've done that here. They're proposing 70 units total, 18 of them will be deed restricted affordable units for a minimum of 30 years, mm. renting to customers earning income at or below 80% of the area median income established by HUD.
Gotcha. And for area or for this program, is there any other restriction about where you could build these units? Or is it like, hypothetically, if you went through the process, you could put these on every square inch of the town? You just got
under the comprehensive permit?
Yeah.
About the only thing that's going to limit you mm. are public health and safety questions.
Okay.
So your location would mm. have to be able to, it would have to be accessible. You have to be able to get emergency vehicles in and out mm-hmm. safely. You have to be able to get necessary utilities in and out. So, mm. you know, potable water in, sewage out, whether it's by a sewer line or a septic system. Mm. And then you have to meet the minimum housing criteria, whatever they may be. But pretty much beyond the health and safety, you are given a lot of leeway.
Okay.
Because the state, you know, especially under current circumstances, is going to prioritize the creation of housing mm. over the other aesthetic needs and issues that are embedded in a zoning ordinance.
Right. Right. Okay. One final question, and then I promise I will stop derailing this.
This is all good stuff.
I'm curious. Is this a new program, or has this been around for a while? Because like, I feel like if the program is new, awesome. Like, great. That's cool. If the program is not new, I look around the town and I do not see a lot of apartments. So it seems like there's some sort of barrier.
So I'd have to go back and check the act. I think mm. early 2000s. Is that the HOMOD Act? Okay.
It doesn't seem to be dated.
Gotcha.
So it's been around for a while. Mm. Again, you have to find a developer
True.
That wants to set aside 25% of his units to affordable.
Right.
You know, that's money out of their pocket.
True. Yep. Yeah.
So sometimes it's a carrot to get people to propose stuff where they might ordinarily not get to propose it, and right. sometimes it's just not enough.
Gotcha. No, this is all useful. I'm basically just trying to calibrate how strict I should be with this kind of stuff by knowing like what would be the possibilities in the future. Because I don't know, like I feel like frankly the actual solution is make the zoning way less restrictive so that you don't need to make 25% and you can just like kill them with supply.
Get the house.
But well, I guess
how are you going to get the affordable housing?
Right. So
that's
totally
your issue because construction costs mm-hmm. limit that.
Right.
Now there are other programs that you can use the federal affordable affordable housing tax credits. Mm. There's HUD funds, the block grant, stuff like that. But you have to really partner. And the mm-hmm. thing is, there are areas like Providence. Some of the other more densely populated areas that tend to score better on the projects, mm. depending mm. on what there's a thing called the qualified allocation plan that mm. the state comes up with. It has certain goals it's trying to create, and you get points for as many of those as you can hit.
Gotcha.
A lot of times it's hard for a rural area
mm. to be able to get those funds and make it.
Why is it so much harder in a more rural area?
Because you don't hit the goals as easily.
Because our land costs are high. Oh. So that the same dollar amount here buys a lot less than it does
right.
Cranston, Warwick Province.
Right.
And there's a denser population, so there's higher,
yeah.
you know, but it doesn't help that there aren't a lot of programs that work well. There's probably something with rural development, but, which is the farmer's home mortgage. Mm-hmm. They have programs too, and they have to be in communities of less than 50,000 population, but it's small, and they're hard to get.
So if we were to hypothetically construct one of the like the classic sort of ugly modern blocky like gentrification apartments, you know, like the 4 or 5 story maybe, but they're you know, they're housing tons of people, but just like kind of reasonably small apartment size units, and they're just notoriously cookie cutter because they're trying to do everything they can to save money. Like, yeah.
It just looks different.
Right. So, like,
but that's
I guess the question I have is, let's, if zoning isn't a factor, and you can acquire, like, at whatever the market rate is for the town, you can acquire enough space to put this thing, and there's no restriction in terms of, like, let's just say they're all going to be market rate units. Like, is that something that developers would jump at, or is there no money to be made for that?
I don't. You'd have to ask the developers.
Yeah, I guess so.
You're asking a real lot of good questions, and there's so many directions I can take these.
Sure.
So, so I'll go back way to earlier in your conversation. So I always, you know, when I'm planning, we have a meeting and developers presenting an affordable housing components, and the neighbors are upset about this affordable housing.
Right.
You know, they don't want this, you know,
classic,
increased density. And I thought, you know, what I typically say is that, you know, our job here is to evaluate the benefits to the community, the impacts to the community, and draw a balance, right? So when you start increasing the density, right, and you get additional housing, there's a benefit for the additional housing, but then there's also impacts. And the higher that density goes, right, so if you're going 1.5 times what the density is, it might not be too bad to impact, but if you go 3 times the density, now it's going to be totally outside the neighborhood, it's outside the characteristics, and it's going to be all types of impacts, you know. So our job is always, I always look at it as our job is to balance those things, the needs of the community versus the impacts of the community. And where we draw that balance in the plan, well, maybe a little bit different from this board, where you may be a little more focused on the affordable housing. But it's, you know, it's just difference, maybe slightly difference in perspective. So that's one thing. The other thing is, you know, your options of where you can build these things. So the town does have a zoning that's called multi-unit, which allows apartment buildings. And it's also allowed in commercial downtown, sort of fairly high density, commercial neighborhood, and a less so of a density. But it's probably not, I mean, like commercial is something like 1% of the land or something like that, or 0.6 of 1%, or it's pretty small. So it's one of the things I think that a lot of people would agree with is that there's not as many options. But the other thing is too is the infrastructure, right? Because if you're going to do that, you need sewers, right? You need public water, that type of stuff. So that kind of limits it a little further. But options is definitely what this board should be thinking about. I mean, you should be saying, hey, we want to maybe increase where apartments allow. We want to allow them in R40 districts, or R30 districts, or R20 districts, where there's water, you know. So we think that should be, instead of prohibited, it should be a special use permit. Those types of recommendations, you are definitely should be looking at and making recommendations.
You know, I would agree with that.
And you are both advisory to the planning board as well as advisory to the town council. So there's some things you may say, hey, planning board, we want you to look at this and we think you should consider that. And then there's other things you may feel like, no, we're going to make this recommendation strictly to the town council. Mm-hmm. And with that said, it would be good if you sent it for informational purposes at least. But I believe that this board is somebody advisory to the vote, right? And it has the right to be advisory to vote.
It is. And to the extent, any of your advisory recommendations involve creating new ordinances or changing ordinances, that's going to wind up going to the planning board regardless.
Right.
Because even if you make the recommendation to the town council, the town council has to turn around and run the ordinance by the planning board.
Gotcha.
But I mean, when you do that, you're going to be applying that balance. So it's not just about, hopefully it's not just about cramming as many units as possible. It's also the quality of life for them and the people that it's running.
Sure.
So that was a couple of jerks. I forgot there was a couple of things I probably wanted to say, but I'll
I'm sure it'll come back up.
Yeah.
No, that's good.
Okay. So
we
have a draft letter here.
Yeah, we have a draft letter. We also, I can tell you, we have at least another month to talk about it, consider it.
I would like to have Meg in here, since she wrote the letter, to give some...
Well, she wrote an outline for the letter, and I sort of filled in around edges of the outline. But I sent her what I put together based on her outline. I didn't hear anything back on her thoughts, so I would be interested to hear if she hated what I did.
I think you did a good job.
I will say this, Josh, though. My own feeling is that the town of South Kingstown is not friendly enough to the development of higher density and apartments and that type of stuff. It just has a collection of regulations and availability and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's difficult for developers.
Well, and people that changes, and they're afraid that the character of the town will change.
I totally hear it.
But as I point out, doing nothing is going to change the character of the town because you're not changing the character of the physical town. But you're changing the character of the community because you're forcing elements of the community out who can no longer afford to be here.
Exactly.
And therefore you don't have people working in your shops. You don't have people.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not just people working in your shops, it's the people teaching your kids and, and the people in uniform and the police cars.
One thing I did, I did that. And not even the police, a starting salary police officer could buy a house in this town based on their salary and what you could do with a mortgage. So.
Even some of the positions at URI too, for staff even faculty, it takes them a while to get tenured, so their first years in there.
My son just has a job in Massachusetts doing cybersecurity work. He's making more than me. And he just bought a house in Eastern Connecticut because he can't afford it.
It's amazing. And this is where, at least my personal feeling on it is it feels like there are kind of two choices. It's like, do you want to be a community that is only accessible for rich people, or do you want to be a community that's accessible to all kinds of people? And even if that means that it might, the veneer might look different, but it's not like you're tearing down the whole town to do this. It's just allowing, different kinds of things
and
in.
There are tasteful ways of doing it.
Totally. Like it doesn't need to equal eyesore. So,
You do have that.
Yeah.
The infrastructure. You start being density, then to your point of just septic. How do you make that work? How do you make that work in the soils that are around here?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think generally density should be a good thing for infrastructure because, it might require some costs
to get it there.
Right, exactly. It might be costs up front, but it's Like if you have more tax revenue in a smaller amount of area, you can, you know, you have to, like, let's just take as a sort of an easy end of the spectrum, an unbelievably distant rural area where everybody lives down a multi-mile road or something, all in their own mansion. And if you're having to, like, connect these towns or these really spread out places with things like power, like, it's going to cost so much just to get it out there. Whereas if you then decide to introduce a whole bunch of density, the existing grid might not be able to support that. But with that said, in terms of like a per capita basis, being able to deliver power to those people should be cheaper. It's like, especially in the long run. Like, I mean, up front, of course, there's costs to expanding a system. But if the idea is that you're going to be able to do better tax-wise as well, then it should pay for itself. But
yeah,
I sort of operate under the assumption that towns don't have a lot of money anyway, so I know that's like, it's not easy.
I was just going to say, and thinking about sort of the resistance, thinking about what Joe said and thinking about what George said, you know, is the just sort of that natural resistance to changing your ideas. Some of our job is just going to be keep pushing the ideas out there, right?
I mean,
even if we don't expect
and we'll get to the educational outreach.
Good.
Yeah,
because that needs a good push.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. So it would be my recommendation that we wait till the next meeting before we send the letter.
Okay.
And
works for me.
Yeah, as long as you've got time.
If we have enough time, do you have enough? You think you have enough time?
This is on
the. They're going to continue it for next meeting, so there won't be a hearing because they're looking at some of this other stuff. I think they've already requested it be continued because it's already on the agenda for next week.
Yeah. I mean, I will tell you that there was considerable concern from several members of the planning board at how dense that was, how challenging the site was, and how many units were being proposed.
Yeah.
And just bear in mind that, you know, these discussions are not necessarily yay or nay, but it may be, yeah, great, can you scale it back a couple of units, or do you, instead of spreading out so far, do you go up another floor and pull in and create a little bit more space around the building? You know, so there are different ways to skin the cat to try and get to a result that works for everybody. So, you know, think, you know, creatively on the solution. And I tried to, I had originally had the letter completely drafted, and I came back to it and I said, you know, we should really phrase some of these comments as questions, you know, how can we address these things better? And I think that that's a good way to present it to the planning board.
I agree.
We see this issue, how can we address this?
How can this be?
This shortcoming a little bit better.
Yeah, and I think that's
helpful.
Yeah, something about the other thing you had mentioned, Josh, was about these cookie cutters, and if you did cookie cutters, you could get, you know, more of these. Is it affordable to the developer? So a developer has to do 25% in order to fall into this comprehensive permit, right? So they're going to do 25%. They're not going to do 30 or 40% because they want to make money on the developer, right? And the comprehensive permit process, and we try to stick to this as much as possible, is that the affordable units have to be the same. I shouldn't say the same. They have to be compatible both from size and the aesthetics of the market rate. So if they can't, you know, if they did all cookie cutters, they'd have a hard time selling the market rate ones, so they wouldn't be able to get them. They can't do partial, you know. So the developer's constantly trying to juggle, you know, how big and how expensive and all those types of things that kind of all has to fit. And the board has, you know, I think we've been pretty consistent that those affordable units have to be pretty much the same. So if you have affordable units, or the market rates are 50% one bedrooms, 50% two bedrooms, we want to see the affordable 50% one bedroom, 50% two bedrooms, not just all one bedrooms. Right. If it's a two-story building, and you know, we want to see the same percentage on the first floor as the second floor.
Yeah.
You know, we want to see them pretty much very similar. You know, the feeling is that the need in the town is pretty much for everything. It's for one bedrooms, two bedrooms, it's for three bedrooms. And the only way to get that is to make sure that they're being developed at the same percentages as the market rates. So,
anyways. I like that. Yeah, that's good.
And as Brian had said, it's better to, I think, phrase it, how can we, instead of just saying, no, I don't approve that, how can we, you know, this is where our concern is, how can we get there? Especially in the comprehensive permit process, because it is so difficult to turn it down. If you turn it down and they appeal, they may just blanketly win. So a lot of times what we try to do is say, these are the conditions, and the conditions are such that it becomes acceptable. And then if they appeal it, they have to get decisions on each of those conditions. So.
Gotcha. Yeah.
We had a development where the developer wanted to put in some really nice single-family homes, essentially they're single-family homes, and then for the affordable, it was going to be an apartment above the garage on the single-family it was not a comprehensive permit, so we didn't want to just turn it down. We said, you know, we approved this, but one of the conditions of approval is that the affordables have to be at the same rate. So it has 25% of the houses have to be, and you know, only 25% of the apartments over the garage had to be. You can't make all the apartments over the garage there as the affordable.
Right, that makes sense. Yeah,
and that actually, they and that particular one they appealed and SHAB, the State Housing Affordability Board, sided with us
on
that condition. There were some other conditions they didn't side with us, but that one they did.
It was good to see that they actually held the line on the statute by saying, no, this is, so you're not. Because the whole idea behind the statute is you shouldn't be able to drive down the road and go market rate, affordable, market rate, you know. They should all look the same aesthetically from the outside.
Yeah. Right. And the other concern about that was, you know, the developer was getting the density development bonus because for these affordable. And the concern was, you know, he sells all the houses and the people on the houses decide, oh, I don't want to do the affordable, I'm just going to use it as a pool room. You know, and what, at that point, how can you really force them to make somebody live in the house?
Yeah.
So there was a lot of concerns with that.
Yeah, jeez.
There's so many things you have to go on. Okay, so if we have the time, I would recommend that, but
that
we would hold this until next meeting. You have a motion for that?
We need a motion.
We don't need a motion for that. Good. Educational outreach. Were the any of the things posted on the website that we?
I had started post the things. They did get posted to Facebook. I can reach out to the director of administration and start getting them recycled through the system again.
Yeah. Is there any way to tell how many hits there are on those?
Oh, I have no idea.
I mean, I don't know if they can tell.
I don't know. I
on
don't
the Facebook, I unless people are commenting.
God,
liking,
that's it. Yeah.
I could put those out on the town page to other, the Our Town.
Yeah.
I'm one of the moderators for that one.
Okay.
So I think we might have talked a little bit about that. If I just know what I can put out.
Yeah,
you know?
I will take the town seal off of them and,
right,
and
right.
send them to you.
Okay.
And you can do that.
All right, great.
Yeah. And so if you have any ideas of how we can get out, what we were doing up to this point was putting together a couple quick, easy to read, but points on affordable housing, what the situation is, you know, why it needs to be addressed and that type of thing, just to bring the community in so they understand that things could be done and that type of thing. So if you have any ideas about posts or something like that, that would be great if you could write some of those up too.
Do we have sort of talking points that we could use?
Probably it would be. Do we have all of those in any kind of form? The ones we've written already, because they're pretty much hit the points. It's more of how you can.
Yeah, because you had one about, and I started taking a look at that one too. The one about the coffee shop.
Megan did that one.
Yeah, and I was thinking. Too, we hear through advertisement for real estate and whatnot. Sometimes people get sick of reading things. If you can do like a little reel, like just like a video, just something that just kind of, you know, have some pictures, just that it moves.
Yeah.
You might get more attention. They might not scroll by it. Mm-hmm. You know, something like
and
that.
And when you talk about the Facebook page, you're talking about just
the Art Town. Art Town.
She's talking about Art Town.
Yes, not the official.
Town has its own official Facebook page. That there's only two or three people have admin permission to town hall to.
Okay. Could we find other groups that have Facebook pages that might be willing to support?
Yeah,
I mean, are there...
There could be some other ones throughout the town.
You know,
I can check.
Even churches, you know, religious organizations, mm-hmm. or somewhere where you might find people who would be concerned.
Yeah,
I can check that.
I don't know.
That's
a good
but,
thought.
Good.
Yeah.
Thinking of URI makes me think of Christ the King Church, which has always been a really active social justice sort of.
Is that the one with the rainbow lawn chairs?
No.
Not that,
that
one?
That's the congregationalist.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They're quite liberal.
And the Episcopal Church over there too.
Oh, yeah.
St. Augustine, they're very active with URI too.
Yeah.
So maybe. And they're active on Facebook.
Yeah. And the Peacedale one.
Yes.
Peacedale Congregational also really, you know, has that sort of community vulnerable, you know. Mm-hmm. Interest in more vulnerable populations.
Mm-hmm.
And then do like letters to the editor, anything like that? Is that too old passé at this point?
No,
not like it.
If anybody wants to work on a public service article, we can probably get it printed for free. I mean, most of the local papers like to have content.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you know, we don't have a budget, so we don't really have a way to pay to do a quarter page ad or anything like that, but if you did a letter to the editor or whatnot,
right, that goes in print, and then they have the independent RI newspaper site too, so that covers all of South County.
Yeah, so if somebody wanted to undertake to write a little thing about the housing issues in the area, we could work on, you know, we could circulate it here, and we could see if we could get it printed on behalf of the entire affordable housing community.
Mm-hmm. I'd be happy to do that. I don't have at my fingertips, or even in the anywhere. I don't have sort of those talking points that I think would be really important to sort of grab people's attention. So I just, if I could maybe use some of the, you know, if you
can grab me.
That available.
I say, you know, anybody who's interested in writing letters or working on projects like this, you can sit down and start writing yourself out a bulleted outline of things that you'd like to talk about, and then certainly send it to me or call me and come into the office. I'll be glad to sit down and help put meat on the bones, so to speak, and come up with something. That's
fine. Okay. I'd be happy to work on that.
Okay. The next item is the attracting affordable housing development. So there's your subject.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
you know, the, but there is, you know, what could we do to make it more, and especially making the affordable housing units, not obviously not 100%, because that's not a good idea anyway.
Right, right.
So how can we make it more attractive that they would rather go with our regulations than go with the Low Moderate Income Housing Act, I guess that's what it is called. But for the comprehensive permit process, what can we do that? So that's, we need some ideas on that type of thing too. Mm.
Yeah, so for the newer members, the discussion here is that when a developer decides to either do a subdivision or apartments or whatever in South Kingstown, South Kingstown has an inclusionary zoning regulation. So forget about the comprehensive permit. Even if you didn't do that, there is a certain percentage of the development would have to be affordable housing, which is 20%.
Okay.
So if a developer came in, they didn't do the comprehensive, for major subdivisions, more than five, right? Or,
yeah.
Five or more, is it more than five?
More than five.
More than five. So if a developer came in and said, I'm gonna do a subdivision with 10 houses, he would get a density bonus of 20%, so he'd be able to do 12 houses, two of those would have to be affordable. All right, that's just according to the town's zoning regulation. If the developer instead decides he wants to do the comprehensive permit process, he has to do 25%. And we see more and more of a comprehensive permit because he can ask for whatever waivers he wants. The approvals is much more likely, I shouldn't say more likely, but it's very difficult to turn it down. And there's some other advantages. There's a lot of people that have criticism of the comprehensive permit process and the affordable housing for a lot of different reasons. Who actually ends up in those? Sometimes it's not the most needy. Sometimes it's people that are older that have cash but don't have income. And there's a bunch of reasons. But we can't change the state process, right? We have to accept the state process. So the conversations on this before was, what if we look at our own regulations and can't say to the states, what if we look at our own regulations and see if there's any win-win, something that would create more units for the town would be more desirable for the developer. And if that's the case, make that so that's the attractive, so that the developers want to use the towns. And then we end up with something better than a comprehensive permit. And then the example I use is that whole has to be, affordable housing has to be compatible, which is not necessarily a bad thing, right? And I'm a supporter for affordable housing, like Dallas Ward, I'm about to say. But I'm not so much for it when a developer's developing, let's say, $1.5 million homes next to the water that he has to make one very similar and then sell that for $275,000.
Right.
Instead of doing that, I would rather see, instead of a really big, affordable, nice, affordable house, I'd rather see a couple of affordables that may be less expensive.
Exactly.
But the comprehensive permit doesn't allow that because it has to be equal, right?
Right.
So, but
so
maybe,
the town could do something like that,
maybe
same doing, square
yeah,
footage.
Maybe changing the regulations of the town, it may become more, something like that, to me, could be a win-win.
Yeah.
It would be something that the developer may choose to do and result in maybe more than one unit, right? I'm not necessarily, we kind of, what I said before, we try to stick to, if he's building a two-bedroom, we want the affordable to be two-bedroom. Maybe I'm okay, I stick with that, but I'm okay with, well, maybe if he does two one-bedrooms instead of one two-bedroom, I'm okay, and creates two units for more families or more, you know, small families, I'd be good with that. So the idea here is, maybe we shouldn't worry about the comprehensive permit since we can't change that. Let's look at ours and see if we can make that more desirable and for both the developer and the town.
Yeah.
That was the thought.
Yeah. No, I like that. I like what you were saying too, George, like, you know, making like square footage based. Like that's, yeah. It's interesting. I'm also curious to what extent, you know, when we're trying to incentivize development, Like, how does it go for smaller developers that aren't trying to do 5+ units that are... Because, like, I know one of the issues, like, countrywide, and I don't know how well this applies to specifically this town, but one of the issues is that not only is it single-family zoning, but there's some sort of large minimum size for the parcel of land that everything is allowed to be sold on, and... So the end result is if you're a developer trying to build houses, you're very much incentivized to build like bigger, kind of higher cost dwellings on that land because you can't divide it up to build a couple of smaller ones. And I wonder, is that the case in South Kingstown as well? Or would it be possible for developers, say, to, you know, let's just say hypothetically we have a single property that's kind of in bad shape, is sort of in between a complete, we got to tear this down and start again, or maybe a fixer-upper, and they say, well, we want to tear this down. We're going to, instead of taking it as a 1x1 plot, we'll make it into a 2x2 little mini grid, and we'll put smaller kind of single, kind of like starter home style homes on the smaller squares. Like, is that something that you can do here, or is there some minimum?
So, Brian, you got to correct me if I'm wrong. I think that right now it's greater than 5. If it was under 5, that the builder is not under any requirements to build affordable housing.
Sure.
And I assume that that kind of goes back to whatever that was considered by the town. They decided that on that small amount, it would just make it unfeasible for the developer and be a financial burden for such a small project. Although I don't know if there's any specific regulations that prohibit the town from putting that inclusionary. But maybe something like, well, if you develop more than, you know, 2, one of them has to have an ADU, an accessory dwelling unit, you know, or something like that. Or if you develop more than 3, one has ADU. And I don't think we'd be prohibited doing something like that, would we?
No, I mean, you start running into, you know, how the zoning ordinance is set up in terms of number of units allowed on a given lot.
Yeah. Though ADUs are now allowed.
Well, yeah, no, ADUs are now allowed by right, so it's not a big deal for ADUs. But you're still limited, you know, on a single family lot, you're limited to a certain number of units max.
Yeah.
Right. And to answer Josh's question, I mean, our zoning runs all the way from R10, which is a 10,000 square foot lot, to R200, which is basically a 5-acre lot.
The first one's the minimum? That's outrageous. Can we do something to make that smaller?
Well, it's you got to understand that there are different factors at play. So the 10,000, the 20,000, the 30,000 square lots are typically in your village core areas where we have public water and public sewer to support that level of density. The larger lots, an acre and above, are farther out, are largely dependent on septic systems and well water. And in some instances, they are located over groundwater protection zones. So while I won't disagree that it might at some level be we want everybody to build on big lots. There are also some other reasons why they're so spread out. But yes, I mean, I'm not going to disagree with you. We may need to look at those density issues.
Because I kind of see it as like you fight it from two sides. Like, I like the idea of, especially while prices are crazy, having deeded affordable units, like we're going to make this at a reduced price. But like I feel like the actual long-term solution is just to have like even a market rate house be something that on a modest salary you could afford a small market rate spot. And in order to do that, we need to like, first of all, just build a ton of houses, and second of all, the size of those houses needs to be way smaller than what we're typically building. At least if we want that to happen soon, before we develop strong AI and everybody's, you know, getting UBI to sit on their, you know, psychologist's couch and eat grapes all day. But it's that's sort of what I'm thinking. Like, I remember reading somewhere that the average new home in the U.S. in terms of square footage is something like between 2,000 and 2,500. And, like, that is a massive house. Like, I know in a town like this it might not be massive, but, like...
No, not when you're looking at houses of 10,000 square feet or more.
Yeah, I mean, true. But I guess what I'm getting at is, like, you would find many people, especially working, like, lower-paying jobs, who would want a smaller space, because they're not, even in a much more favorable market, they're not going to be able to afford a bigger one. And so having a minimum size, even in the best case scenario, like even when, you know, we don't necessarily have concerns about like wetlands that you can't build on, or concerns about like this specific part of the town infrastructure is kind of stressed. Like in the best case scenario, we're saying 10,000 square feet. Like, if you're a developer and you got to decide what to put on a 10,000 square foot lot, and like that's the floor, like you're not going to build like a 1,000 square foot house. You're going to build a huge house. Like,
well, and you have to, again, you have to go back to the infrastructure.
Yeah,
there's a certain amount of money just to get the lot ready.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, if you have that much in it, it's very hard to buy to build a smaller house.
Yeah.
You know, or you're going to just spend as much money to buy a smaller house as you can.
Exactly. So, but if you could prep that lot and build four smaller houses, well, that still has space.
And then the other is, you know, the village zone idea of large tract of land, but you build in a smaller area, leaving a lot of green space, and there's reasons for that.
So you're hitting on a lot of good... what the issues are, you know, and it's such a complicated problem, because you have a developer pays $300,000 for a lot, he's not going to build a 1,000 square foot house because, you know, he doesn't want to, can't make $10,000, that's not going to, you know, his investment.
Right.
So there has been, and what you're talking about is definitely recognized as a problem. There are some changes that, for instance, the zoning now, we passed last year, it was combination effort of the planning board and the affordable housing that allows for cottage zoning. So it allows for up to 10 houses, was it? It was eight. It's eight, I think, and then eight houses, but then you get the density bonus. So it might go up to 10, but in an acre, in like an R20 district. So I don't think anybody's taken advantage of that yet. So we have recognized that. Increase the densities significantly, and then the cottage, the whole cottage thing was try to do that in a way where you have less impacts by not just jamming houses in there, but making it like a little community, right? So it requires a center courtyard and a couple other things that then allows you to go up to much, much higher density if you can make this little community. No one's done it yet.
Yeah, that's... Sounds like a good idea.
Education. Okay, we're a little late here, so. So the public forum discussion. That's it. Who was working?
That's just an open discussion item. We don't have anybody here, so.
Yeah, I think that's that one. Do you have any updates?
The affordable housing grants were given out. $200,000 went to the Johnny Cake Center for a project on Kersey Road. They have several properties over there, one of which was a duplex that had a fire. They're going to tear that down and build a quad. All four units will be deed restricted. They will then, the $200,000 that we are donating are going to go towards architecture, engineering, and permitting. They will then take that package and duplicate it on an adjacent lot, so we'll get another four units. Those will not be deed-restricted, but it'll be four more units. And then there's a third lot in the neighborhood that hopefully they'll be able to carry some of the same information over to. The other $100,000 went to the South Kingstown Housing Authority. They are hiring professional planners to relook at their housing development on Curtis Corner Road, Champlain Heights. They currently have 40 units in there. It is very old, desperately needs work, well, really needs dynamite, but so they have a huge chunk of unused land in the back. They think that with a proper development plan for the property that they have, they should be able to double the number of units that they have. So they're gonna, we funded them to go out and hire proper professional planners to come up with a project to better use the property that they have over there. It'll be a very long-term project because you'll involve building units, moving people, tearing units down, building more units, so, but it's going in the right direction. There is still $75,000 that was allocated that was not applied to any projects. I think what we're gonna do is come up with a new housing proposal to use that money for some sort of smaller projects, maybe rehab projects or something like that.
So you'll put out a new...
So I think we're going to be doing a new request for proposals for something like that.
Brian, any insight on proposals that were not approved and kind of what the thought was, why they weren't approved? Just trying to get the full feel for, you know, what's acceptable in the baseline and what isn't acceptable.
Well, I mean, because the ones that weren't approved, we had one application that asked for the full $375,000 but didn't tell us where it was going to be used for or what the project was.
They didn't have property identified?
No.
They just said shot in the dark.
Give me $375,000 and I'll build something. There was another one that had a great project idea, and this is the one that you guys saw.
Right, we heard.
Had a great project idea, but didn't own the property, and had infrastructure issues.
Major.
In terms of the sewer.
Yeah. We hadn't figured a lot of things out.
And between the cost of acquiring the property and the infrastructure issues, it was just, there were too many questions up in the air, and there's only a limited amount of time we have to spend the money in.
Right.
Under the American Rescue Plan.
Where was that source?
That was out in West Kingston.
Wait,
yeah. There's no sewer, oh well, I guess.
They are in the sewer service area.
Oh, they were before the trestle? Or up to the trestle?
No, it's over the trestle. It's on
the trestle goes up, I mean, sewer goes like one more street.
Yeah.
It was in that area.
Yeah, it's right out at the end of the sewer service area. It's like in the northwest corner of the sewer service area. Right. But because of the density they were proposing, it's like you were either talking about a ridiculously expensive septic system or a ridiculously expensive sewer extension. The last one we got, they doubled up and filed the same application under the Human Services Grant application, and it was more their request for funds was more applicable under the Human Services Grant. So they got the money, just not out of the housing side.
Is there any, in the future, do you see any more money coming or from the state or from the federal government?
I mean, housing continues to be a huge issue. I expect there might be some more money coming. I would hope that. I mean, there's lots of money floating around out there for developers out there looking for projects. They should definitely be keeping their eyes out for stuff, because the money's out there. And if somebody were to come to us and say, "Hey, I have this great housing project, but I need some cash to get it going."
Yeah.
We'd certainly be willing to look. And it's not that the proposal in West Kingston was a bad proposal, it was a great proposal. It's just that there were the two huge elephants in the closet that it was too hard to get around those two things. Now, if they came to us, if there was a source of grant funding out there, if the state was doing acquisition funds, that may have been enough to answer it. Or if there was a grant source out there for infrastructure development that would have taken care of that, that might have been enough to take it over the hill. But the two of them combined is just too much.
One of the reasons that Johnny Cake was sort of one of the things that they held up about that when we were talking about it was that they had gone to a number of different resources, right? They had done their homework and really looked into. So that makes me think about when you say that you know, maybe if they can start to get some funding from multiple places.
Well, for those of you who may be familiar, the federal government has what they call community development block grants, the CDBG funds. We have not been participating in that for the last 2 or 3 years because all of the grant administration was being done by a nonprofit here in town, and that nonprofit went out of business, and we don't have the capacity in town hall to monitor all of them, process the grants. There is another organization from the East Bay that's been doing it over there for 40 or 50 years. It's looking to expand to this side. So they've been over here talking to South Kingstown and Westerly, and I think Charlestown, trying to find that mass to make it worthwhile to come over here. Mm-hmm. And it works for them, because when you administer the grants, you're allowed to charge a percentage of the grant for administration expenses. Sure. So they can pay their own salaries and everything if they're processing
successful.
Enough work.
Mm-hmm.
We're working with them. I think it looks really promising, but there's nothing signed in ink yet, so.
Has the town ever thought about using its housing authority as a monitoring agent?
I don't know.
I mean, so, you know, I constantly look at this stuff and think about, you know, development and that type of stuff, but a monitoring agent could be anywhere from, you know, $1,000, $1,500 a year. So if you own an apartment, not only are you factoring in the lower rent, because you have to stay within a certain amount, but you also have this, you know, $1,500 a year expense per apartment.
Yeah.
It's, so it becomes a double whammy, right? Because you're decreasing, which makes it less desirable for developers, obviously, because you're not only decreasing your income, you're increasing your expenses.
Yeah, our housing authority has gone through some pretty big bumps the last couple of years. They when I started 3 years ago, they had basically let their executive director go, and then a bunch of the people on their board of directors walked out. And they think they've finally just gotten the ship sort of stabilized. So it would be an interesting question when they seem to be sailing on an even keel again.
It would be interesting if the town could offer, as an incentive to a developer, that they would provide the monitoring services. I mean, that when you think about that, $1,500 a year times 30 years, that's $40,000, $45,000 a month that the developer's gonna have to, and that's the fact of that it. Mm-hmm. You know, so if it was, I know we've talked about different incentives that you could give developers to create a deed restricted, but I think that would be, you know, one that maybe could be potentially affordable for the town if they had enough of them, and would create quite a bit of value for, you know, developers.
Interesting.
Because I don't know how many, if you're going to think about creating a lot of units, that might be a good use of funds, is to hire somebody to be a monitoring agent and stand that up within the housing authority.
That's an interesting question, because the legislature just created all kinds of training requirements and whatnot for monitoring agents too, so it makes it a little bit more of a hurdle, because now you're going to have to hire somebody who's credentialed.
Anything else? Number recruit? It's down to what, one?
Yeah, we still got one spot left.
Call your friends.
Yeah.
I did my job. I got it.
Anything else? Good business. Entertain a motion for.
I'll motion to adjourn.
Yeah, works for me.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
That's interesting.
Cool.